Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ady Packham and we are preparing to be nauseated at the weekend in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a return to winning ways at the Amex last Saturday as our boys in blue and white recorded a rare, routine, stress-free win over Leeds. It was a win that included another goal for Danny Welbeck, which has increased the clamour for him to be included in Thomas Tuchel's next England squad. But dreams of adding to his 16 England goals will have to wait as we have the small matter of a trip up the road to our annoying neighbours, who'll be keen to remind us of their recent cup success. Let's hope we can answer that, though, in the best way possible by coming home with the points. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And there's an awful lot of chat about AI and ticketing at the moment. So we are delighted to welcome Albion's Head of Ticketing and Supporter Services, Jenny Gower. Welcome to the show, Jenny. You've been making the news.
I have recently, yes. Yeah, it's the great work of some of my colleagues, to be fair, which I'm taking some credit for, I think.
Do tell.
Go on, Al.
No, do tell. I mean, I think probably the vast majority of us knew nothing about it until I saw a story on the BBC about cracking down on second-hand or third-party ticketing sales. If you can just give us some background as to what the law is and what has actually been happening that it made the BBC.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing quite a lot of work on this, particularly this season. It's been an area of focus for us for a while, but it's the first time we've actually hired a specific person to manage this match by match, or in fact, in the week, really, looking at all of the risky transactions that we see coming through. And that's quite a sort of a change for us. We've been doing it slightly off the side of the desk, I would say, with colleagues being able to have a look and try to identify people. But in this season, we have a dedicated resource in a chap called Joseph who's joined us, and he's spending all of his time trying to find these. So yeah, in the Premier League, or particularly in football in the UK, it is illegal to sell tickets through unauthorised sources, and that's obviously for safety and security reasons, and that's something that we're keen to clamp down on.
I mean, I just had a cursory glance at the internet, and loads of things came up still, and now obviously there were some quite eye-watering figures were being quoted for some of these tickets as well. Obviously you're on top of this, but I mean, how do you crack down on it? How do you stop it?
Yeah, I think that's the question we've all been asking ourselves for a long time. And I think, you know, you can find good ways of identifying people, and then patterns change, and we have to sort of adjust to those. So I don't think we have the magic formula. I don't know if there is one. I think the magic formula has to keep changing. Yeah. But for us, it's about looking at suspicious buying patterns. It's about looking at payment transactions, and starting to build some using AI, really trying to sort of use some of the metrics really to make sure that we identify those risky transactions and then block them and see what happens on match day.
So what comes across here is all right, you're talking about AI to sort of to do the iffy, what comes across as an iffy thing, but I mean, I assume that certainly some things are getting through, but without obviously giving a live example, can you give us a hypothetical example as to, without breaking any confidences, how you're doing it and what the AI can recognise?
Yeah, I think there are certain buying patterns that we start to see. It's difficult not to give too much away, but from our side, we get a lot of information in back office systems about when people are buying, how many they're buying. There's lots of additional data that we're seeing about where credit cards are registered. And there are certain patterns that start to emerge that we can look at. We're particularly aware of things like prepaid credit cards these days and the ease of being able to get yourself a credit card. And those are often the things that we see.
Okay, I mean, obviously, Mittermania is very real, and it is a thing, and we're absolutely delighted to welcome thousands of Japanese to the Amex most weekends. How are they are these guys sourcing their tickets? Presumably that's directly through the club.
Yeah, absolutely. The way to purchase is to buy through the club to register for free on our website. There's lots of games that go on general sale. There's also plenty of games where you have to be a member. But yeah, we try and make that really easy for people. It's just that sometimes, particularly in the search engines, if you're a visitor from Japan and you put in Brighton tickets, there's obviously a number of hits that come up. We want people to buy officially through us, then they won't have any problems. But if you buy through some of these third-party sites, you're going to pay top prices, and then you have a very real chance that you're not going to get in.
So is this a problem that's let's call it for what it is, touting. Is this touting a UK-wide problem? Was it mostly overseas and international?
It's a mixture, I think, for us. We're very aware of the international markets being particularly strong. I think if you see a lot of the people on match day who have fallen victim, they are predominantly tourists who've come along who want to watch a Premier League match and tick that off their bucket list, really. And I think those are the people who are prepared to pay these very, very high prices.
Yeah, because Jelly, I know that a lot of clubs do actually sell tickets through places like Viagogo. I mean, I did have a look on there as well. There's no Albion tickets on there, but I know that we wouldn't have that. But I mean, that is, I think they're terrible, but they are a reputable company.
Yeah, I think probably the days of using some of the third party reselling sites like your kind of Viagogos and your StubHubs, that doesn't really happen so much in the league now. I think we all have the technology at our own fingertips to set up a really successful exchange on our own systems, and also then an exchange that we can control and make sure that we're selling to the right people at the right price. So I think you'll find that the vast majority of the Premier League now are all running these in-house.
I was about to say that you've employed a person to sort of take an overview of what's happening here, and I assume therefore report back to you, and report back to the police. When you say it's most Premier League clubs, do you do it individually, or is there a collective where you can actually share information?
There's not the sharing of if people are convicted, then we share information, and that is something that we have as part of our terms and conditions, the right to share information for the prevention of crime. So that is in our terms and conditions, and there is a lot of information sharing in terms of tactics about how people work together and systems they put in place. So there's a real network amongst the Premier League. We're all battling the same issues, and we do work together to try to minimize them.
Yeah, because
If you
so hang on, if you do find someone, if you isolate and find someone, now I assume that probably the jurisdiction only extends as far as our borders, but is the club or the club in question, because obviously we're talking about up to 20 of them, is the club in question involved in the prosecution, or is this something only the police can do, whereby they'll obviously hand off on stuff to CPS and the club can help. Where do you stand within the judicial part of this?
Yeah, from our side, we would involve. We have a great relationship with Sussex Police. In fact, we have a meeting with them at the end of this week about a particular touting case that we've been looking into, and they've been really supportive working with us. So that's something that an angle that we're keen to use more than we probably have done. And there has been quite a lot of support through the Premier League as well for a lot of these actions as well. There are difficulties with some of the legislation about
Yeah.
where websites are hosted.
Because I mean, some of the numbers that we've seen come through on this, like so there was 285 tickets identified by Spurs, 350 against Newcastle, and these are people that actually turn up at the Amex on match day.
Yeah, we see a lot of them on match day. There are some that we don't see. Presumably, there's an amount of speculative buying from ticket touts, and they don't sell everything. I think there's also a number of supporters who will attempt entry, and if they can't get in, they'll be given very clear instructions by the touts that they're not to approach the ticket office. So I think there's a number of people that we don't see, but we are getting a good return for the number of tickets that we're blocking, and we're starting to make some real headway into reducing the database of the wrong people.
Because
course,
I
is
mean,
it?
presumably you're training the ticket office staff as well in this. Because I mean, if you've got, I mean, there was that the story of that one guy that came over from Korea, so it was like 5,000 miles to get here. Although it does look like he was a Spurs fan, which tells half the story. But I mean, when these people get to the ticket office and they say, "Sorry, your ticket's not valid. You're not coming in," people's first reaction will be to get angry, right?
Yeah, it's really hard, and it's difficult because these people have bought in good faith, and we genuinely have sympathy for the situation that they find themselves in. So if we can try to help, we will. There are occasions when we can, there are occasions when we can't. And the gentleman that you mentioned from Korea who'd come all the way for this to support Spurs, we didn't have any tickets that we could sell him. We can't put him in the away end, and I'm afraid he had to go and watch it in the local pub. And that's horrible for him. But also, for safety and security reasons, putting him in the home end, and then there being an issue is absolutely not something we're prepared to do.
So, just as a point of excuse me, of legal clarity. Now, you're saying it's illegal to sell tickets via a third party or an unlicensed third party. Is it therefore illegal to buy those tickets from that same illegal ticket seller?
Don't think there's any illegality from the perspective of the purchaser. So they have just they're a victim really to the tout who has sold to them. But you absolutely are not permitted to sell unless you're licensed, and you're certainly not permitted to sell at inflated prices.
So when, I mean, with AD saying he's doing his scouting around the internet for whatever ticket prices might be available via a Moody third party, because a lot of them, especially those who are advertising to overseas potential customers slash victims, they'll often sell an entire package. And like I say, when you see the eye-watering numbers that go four figures and higher, and is it also the case that not only are these tickets moody, that it's entirely possible those tickets have never existed in the first place?
Yeah, that is the really difficult one. There is often a case where the ticket is just a complete ghost, and people will. I mean, I've seen in the ticket office on match days, sometimes people will photocopy bits of previous tickets and stick them together literally, and then just photocopy them and think that that's going to work. And somebody has bought that.
That
And
would be
then there's
great.
people who come up to the ticket office to give a name and think that there's a ticket being held for them, and there's nothing there.
Wow.
So yeah, these people are real victims in this situation. They believe they've parted with a huge amount of money, and then they see nothing. It's really sad sometimes.
Now,
Well,
I mean, I'm
I,
just
sorry,
looking at this
sorry,
thing now.
AD,
I mean, this
go on.
advert on here is just ridiculous, right? So it says, "Are you a Brighton Hove Albion fan? Eager to see Brighton Hove Albion live in action? Delete name here is your ultimate source for buying Brighton FC tickets online."
Well, as soon as they say Brighton FC, you know there's something wrong, because Brighton FC
it's
is actually a
it's
rugby
it's
club. But yeah, sorry, we've got to sort of kind of move it on from this particular subject. We're still going to give you the grilling in a minute, though, Jenny. Is
All right.
just sort of one last thing was so obviously this has now become very much in the public arena. Especially, like I say, it was on the BBC, and other clubs are saying that what they're doing. So, are there any sort of, I suppose, probably not initiatives, but are there any other things that we're going to see going forward? You said you got a meeting with Sussex Police about a particular case. Is this kind of the kind of thing that you're actually going to be putting out there more and more to say, look, these people, they're scamming these people, but we also want to say, don't get scammed in the first place because dot dot dot. So how is there anything that the club can do to stop people getting scammed in the first place?
Yeah, I think a lot of these messages and the work that we're doing and the BBC promoting these stories, I think all of this helps, right? This is people reading this information who are just it starts to permeate out. And I think that's the efforts that we're all going to across the whole league to get the information out there. If you're buying, buy from the club. Don't buy from third parties.
Because when there are people that are reading like the reports on the BBC, and that they are completely misreading it. They're not misreading the room, and they're not reading what's actually being said. They're thinking and leaving yourselves open to criticism to a certain degree.
Yeah, I think we've. I mean, the advantage for us has been that the more this information is out there have been people who have proactively checked with us. You know, they've contacted us prior to a game and said, "I've bought these tickets through, for example, StubHub. Can you tell me if they're valid?" And those people, you know, if you give us good notice on that kind of thing, we may well be able to help you out. So people have been great in kind of contacting us in advance where possible. We have a whole web page about those people who have purchased from third parties and how to report it to us. And we do a lot to try and handhold people through a process afterwards as
Yeah.
well, where they can try to reclaim the money from the people that they've purchased from.
Now let's move this on. Thanks so much for that, Jenny. But whilst we've got the head of ticketing and supporters services on, so we're gonna, sort of not exactly give you the third degree, maybe the second degree, because we're feeling lovely. Another part of your job is obviously, well, the main part of your job is the ticketing aspect, and obviously the attendance that we get at the end of every game. 31,500, whatever it might be, as wonderfully read out by Richard Reynolds, doesn't obviously, and we all know this, doesn't reflect how many people are in the stadium itself. And as I understand it, the actual number of people who are coming through the turnstiles is confidential information. We always understand that. But I've also been led to believe from an anonymous source that the take up is that, well, so the number of people through the turnstiles is far closer than the number given out. Is that the case?
Yeah, this season, I have to say, we have seen a huge change in resales and in the number of people coming through the turnstiles on match day, and it's been brilliant to see. We've had really great numbers of people, bums on seats, better than we've had in. I started going back, and I got to 4 years, and we are by far getting more people in to support the team, which is brilliant, and I think. There's a number of reasons for that. I think the ticket resale is a big part of that. Lots of people, if they can't come to games, listing their tickets in good time prior to the match and giving another Albion fan the chance to come in and support the team.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, so I mean, obviously, there's the technicalities of the ticket resale, and I mean, sadly for me, I was ill during the summer, so I had to miss the first two games of the season. I managed to get my ticket into the exchange, and thankfully, it was sold. So, a little bit of a result for me. It's not something I intend to do on a regular basis. I'd rather go. But with that in mind, I mean, you're saying the technicalities and the easiness of doing it, but on the pitch, is there anything that's sort of being said around the club that hints at why we're getting a greater sort of take up of those who have actually bought their tickets versus what's gone before?
I think quite a bit of the change. I mean, A, I think people are genuinely enjoying the experience at the Amex. I think they always do, but I think we've added a lot, obviously, to the match day experience. Things like the terrace, all those sort of things, I think,
Yeah.
help the match day experience. And then I think there is also, you know, this year there has been a change to the policy about utilisation, about if you're a season ticket holder and you can't go. That there is some requirements on you now to make sure that if you don't go, you do at least give somebody else a chance. And I
Yeah.
think we are seeing that pay off with the gates we're getting.
But
Yeah, because
you're those
only,
emails
sorry,
that
Aidan,
went
can
out
I,
are, sorry,
sorry,
Al.
Aidan, can I just do a follow-up question on this though? Because it's going to be important for me at some point again later this season, is that you only open the exchange when you've actually sold a certain amount of tickets. So if there's a game that hasn't reached its tipping point for the exchange, then we're going to have an issue here. And I mean, like, I'm thinking, for instance, I mean, I know, unless it gets moved, I know I'm going to miss the Sunderland game, one just before Christmas. And I would be of the opinion that that's a game where a lot of people, just because of their Christmas commitments, are not necessarily going to turn up. And therefore, does the trigger for the exchange come in? Or have you set the bar slightly lower for the exchange to open, Jenny? Yeah, I mean, I think we are blessed to say that we have sold out of games in good time for every match so far this season. And at the moment, looking at the sales going ahead, and actually particularly Sunderland, with it being the kind of our closest Christmas game, I think that's actually been one of the games that sold the best actually out of the
Brilliant.
recent bunch. So
Perfect.
So in good news, I think it's very likely we will put the exchange on for all of the matches upcoming at the moment. I think the time where that gets more difficult is if we play a team that takes a much lower allocation, doesn't take the full 3,000, but that's very rare in the Premier League. So we tend to sell through in good time, and I think the exchange has generally been on at least 2 weeks prior to every match so far.
Fair enough.
How much take up have you had of the option to share your ticket?
Yeah, we get good numbers of that. It really varies. Lots of people use the free share that they get every season. So that tends to be used particularly around the holiday times. Yeah, as Alan says, for the Sunderland game, there'll be plenty of families who will be probably elsewhere around the country, and they can list their ticket on the exchange, or they can share their ticket. And there's a lot of that happening. But yeah, we get a really good take up of that. There's plenty of people that buy the seasonal sharing who know they're probably not going to go to quite a few games in the season. But it varies. It depends on the kickoff time and the date
Right.
and what's happening in people's lives, I guess.
As long as we never, ever, ever have another Boxing Day 8 o'clock in the evening kickoff again. I know that the club couldn't do a great deal about it, but I bet that was a nightmare for you, wasn't it?
I don't think that's anyone's favourite game to work either, an 8 o'clock on Boxing Day. It's a difficult one, isn't it? You've got to get everyone out of their pyjamas for the evening. Just yeah, look, we do it. I think yeah, the football schedule has been pretty kind to us this year, so we can't complain.
Absolutely, because it
Yeah,
was
and well,
when we were sort of looking at the stadium being built, I always thought, and I did actually ask Martin Perry one time, I said, how are we going to cope with, given that obviously there was a lot more emphasis on public transport, how on earth are we going to cope on Boxing Day when there is no public? Well, so yes, no fixture on Boxing Day suits me down to the ground. Absolutely. I'm probably suits probably most people down to the ground, even though obviously Boxing Day is a massive football tradition. It's probably because I'm just becoming old and smelly,
Well,
so
if we're not playing, there's plenty of other local games, Al.
that's true. That's true. I mean, Boxing Day this year, I'm like I say, I'm with the in-laws this year, so I'll probably go and watch Grimsby against Oldham. So I'm actually quite looking forward to it.
How
So
the other half live. Okay, look, now, Jenny, you mentioned it there earlier, and obviously the Terrace opened last season, and it's seen a lot of take up. It's always busy. I think one of the things that it was designed to do was to take the pressure off the trains a little bit, and it really has done that, hasn't it?
yeah, absolutely. I think it's been really popular for fans. You see fans coming in who want to come in nice and early to matches, who pour into the Terrace and watch those games on those huge screens. So I think it's working really well ahead of the game and after the game. There's lots of people that hang around afterwards and watch the late kickoffs. It's taken that little pinch point out of when everyone is queuing for the trains. There's actually a really nice place to go and get a drink and watch a match before you head out. So yeah, it's been a noticeable change to the way that people flow in and out the stadium.
So, I mean, I got the club a few quid as well, I'd imagine.
I'm sure it's had an upside like that as well, yes.
Okay, so that's that. I just want to move on to something which, to be fair, the football authorities took decades to be dragged kicking and screaming into, in which the club finally sort of acquiesced to this season. How has safe standing gone?
It's been really successful. The first game of the season, we had an unbelievable attendance level in the North Stand, which was interesting. It was by far the most attended match in the North Stand than we've had in years, and I think it was just people so anxious to go in and go and experience it. And yeah, all the feedback I've seen has been extremely positive, and I think it's helped the atmosphere as well. So yeah, I think all in all, as far as I'm aware, positive feedback from fans.
I mean, obviously, if it was a initial trial, and if it was successful, you might be able to roll it out further across the stand. Is that still the plan?
Yeah, I think that's something that we will need to look into in the tail end of well, probably the later part of this season, as to whether or not there's appetite from the lower rows for us to go down further. There is obviously plans about moving the away fans in the 27-28 season, and that will probably also incorporate a degree of safe standing over in the south stand.
Yeah,
I
obviously,
was
yeah, I
just going to
forgot
say, well,
about that.
how was it administratively for you? I mean, obviously there was people who wanted to stand, but where they were was going to, and some had to move and some didn't. Did it actually sort of work itself out smoothly, or did you have to sort of put up with one or two people really sort of, shall we say, feeling a little entitled?
No, I think in great news, the vast majority, I think, of the North Stand absolutely wanted this. So I don't think we were pushing against, the general consensus. There were people that moved out, but it was relatively few. We didn't have probably a huge amount of movement out. We did have an awful lot of people wanting to move in, and we probably haven't been able to meet the demand of everybody that would like to be in there. So again, that's something for the longer term in terms of us at some point looking at the South Stand. That there will be more opportunities for people.
I was about to ask, did you sell out on the safe standing bit? And now you're, I mean, have you actually created a waiting list for this now?
Yeah, we haven't done that. We do a moves window every year. We'll do one again at the before the 26-27 season. People will have a chance to either move out, move in. We've held a very small number of safe standing places for match by match, but it is very minimal.
Yeah.
The ticket exchange is probably actually your best bet of getting into safe standing these days.
Yeah. Oh,
So,
really?
how are plans progressing, actually? I mean, you mentioned the South Stand there. How are the plans progressing to move the away supporters into a different section? I know that there was talk of like renovating the Heineken Lounge because of that.
Yes, so absolutely, that will be a core part of the allocation for the away end will be that Heineken Lounge seating, which will then be sort of extended a little bit further round. So the away fans will be in that southwest corner, which hopefully means we can own both goals, which I think is the key for us from an atmosphere perspective and from home advantage is we want to be able to get Brighton fans behind both the north and the south goal. So that's what we're looking for. We're a long way down the road with the architect's plans. They've got the small matter of building a north hospitality lounge for the over the course of this season. But once that's done, we start looking at the next plan.
The 1901 pub.
Yeah, to quote Richard Hebbard, more ruffians.
I don't think so. It's more 1901.
No, I mean, if you're going to have, like I say, if you're going to have the North Stand in the South Stand, if you see what I mean, you've got to have, again, it's, I mean, if you're going to have the maximum advantage, it's almost like splitting the sort of the noisy fan base again in order to create that advantage. Having said that, I don't think any football club has two sets of noisy fans behind, though there's always one cop, isn't there? There's never two ends that are sort of, no stadium has two cops, does it?
No, quite a few of yeah.
You reckon? You mean, as
Yeah,
in sort of like,
definitely, yeah. Well,
I'll
Palace is the
say
away
that's not
end.
too
Palace
bad.
the away ends at the side. Everton the away end was
No,
at the
no, no, no.
side.
So I'm talking about the home thing here. I'm talking about
All
the
right.
home. Yeah, I'm talking. Obviously, the Palace have got their Homesdale Road, and then at the other end they've got Sainsbury's. So that doesn't really count. And I mean, I'm thinking famously, Liverpool's cop, and whatever's at the other end, and so on and so forth. So we have to get more ruffians in. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Alan. You buying any flowers this week?
I am actually. It's my wife's birthday next week, so she's not enlisting at the moment. But Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. Thank you very much indeed to our sponsor, Dave Costa. And this is what they say about them good selves. Whatever your reason for sending flowers or gifts, we can help. If it's a birthday, it is. I'm not, by the way, I know it's your birthday this week, Adi. You're not getting flowers off me, so you can swing for that.
Thank God for that.
Yeah,
I
good. Anniversary,
love the
birth.
chocolates and the champagne, though.
Yeah, not in this universe. From me, you won't. If it's a birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. If it's a wedding or a corporate event, our team will come up with something to wow you. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide the service and quality you really deserve. And I have many times used their services, and they are absolutely brilliant. I say,
Indeed.
yes, and yes, and I do need to go and get some more this week. I don't need to, I want to. So Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, or go online, flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. And if you're an Albion fan, don't forget, tell them that and you'll get 20% discount. Flowers Unlimited. Thanks, Dave.
Okay. And before we move on, thanks to everyone for all the feedback to the show from Seb Carell last week. Don't forget, if you enjoyed that, there are hundreds of other shows in our archive over on Audio Boom and on our website, Al.
I was chatting to a good friend of mine, Stephen. He's only just jumped on the Albion surfboard, shall we say. It's not a bandwagon, it's a surfboard. With his his friend Matthew. There, got it. He's just transferred over a great expense from Spurs. They're both throwing themselves, it's wonderful, they're throwing themselves full-blooded, full-headed into the Albion story. To the point that Steve hadn't actually read or even heard of Build a Bonfire. So that's another thing to add to his mounting education. But he's also only just listened to for about two or three of these Albion Roars. And I did point out to him that do you realise that we are probably about 850, maybe 900 shows in? It's only 18 and a half years that this has been going. And he looked horrified, and I think the thought of 850 hours of listening to you and me probably made him want to go and support someone else.
Well, that is true. It is
It
true.
would
But
me. It would me.
I mean, I'm sure Jenny was like you must have read Build a Bonfire, Jenny.
You're not going to do a test on me, are you?
No, no,
No.
no, no, no. What we're wondering is that because
Please say it.
we were discussing this earlier, is it still the case that when a player is comes to the club or when anyone, I suppose backroom staff as well, are they told the story? For those that don't necessarily know, it was amazing times. It was worrying times, but it was amazing times. And when people then get, oh, it's wonderfully told in Stand or Fall, but also like I say, Build a Bonfire, We Want Falmer. I think it's just one of those things. One of the reasons that hopefully makes your job a bit easier is how much we want this to work because we spent so much time and so much effort doing what we could to save our club. There were those who did more than some, less than others, and we know who was at the forefront of it. And we know that Paul was very much a part of fighting for the Albion's future, and as were many others. In fact, hundreds, probably thousands of others. But I mean, I suppose it's one of those things that Attila and both Attila and Liz Costa say, but I think is probably felt by many is that every time they see the stadium for a game or they're coming here for a function or whatever it is, there's a part of them that says, all right, yes, Tony paid for it, but we did that. That was our project. That was something that we did. And so I'd hope that, in that sense, Jenny, that your job is made that little bit easier by the fact that we just want this to work.
I think the togetherness of the Albion fans to get us where we are. I don't think that's lost on anyone. And I think the Stand or Fall documentary, we all watched it actually as staff. We all piled into the mail room back to the lounge and watched that in different lunch breaks across a number of days. And I think particularly for the new staff that probably were less aware of the history of the football club.
Yeah.
I think it's been really eye-opening, and it just sort of gives you that real flavour of what's unique and what's special about the Albion.
Absolutely. I mean, it won't be long, probably no more than about another 4 or 5 years when we're going to have someone playing for the Albion first team that was born after the stadium opened.
Oh, good God. I'll have to find out. When I try and find out what was the number one, then the chance won't exist.
No, whatever it was rubbish. I mean, we've obviously already got players playing. In fact, probably nearly everyone play was born after Dick Knight took over. So if we're talking 97, they're 28 now. Probably 2/3 of the squad were born after Dick Knight took over. I mean, having said that, I know it sounds like sort of old men telling war stories and being belligerent and grumpy, but. And I've said this so many times, AD, this is a story which must be kept alive.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Jenny, I touched on it briefly earlier, and it is something that it really is actually a thing. So when you're dealing with the thousands of mitomaniacs that come to the games, both home and away, it must be an absolute delight for you.
Oh, look, I think we You look at the crowd that we see outside, and the outside the ticket office on match days now, and I compare it to when I joined, which was in the Championship, and what it looks like now. We have such incredible following across the globe of people wanting to come and watch Albion, and people that know our story from all corners of the world. It's just so different. But the Matoma fans are fantastic. We see a lot of them on match day. Always very polite. We have a wonderful new member of staff who's joined our Here to Help team, who's Japanese this year, who's been an
Oh
absolute
wow.
blessing for us. Yeah,
Perfect.
she's fantastic. She helps us where we fail with all our communication, and she's brilliant. So yeah, it's they've been a pleasure to host.
I don't know if it betrays a commercial confidence or not, but when I get to the ground for a match day, I would say I see dozens of Japanese fans. Are you able to reveal any kind of number of tickets that we sell each home game to? As I understand it, people flying in specifically from Japan rather than Japanese people living in England. So, but have you got a, are you in a position to let us know how many Japanese fans turn up each home game?
No, I would say it varies wildly depending on when the game is, and particularly if the game is on general sale or we have a real open sale of a match. That's when we see an awful lot more Japanese fans coming in. When we're on restricted sale to members, we see less international tourists. So for games this season, we regularly see over 1,000 people travelling, not necessarily just from Japan, but from outside of the UK coming to matches.
But I'm surely the Japanese must be the biggest cohort.
Yeah, absolutely. They are the biggest group of our international members, and they're the biggest group of our match day attendees.
I wonder if anyone's actually told them Matoma's injured at the moment. Doesn't seem to. That's see that that is an interesting point. I mean, again, I was with Attila just before the game on Saturday, and we saw the what I say dozens, but. Clearly, Jenny's intimating it's hundreds of Japanese fans that come along. And the fact that surely the word has got about that Matoma, their hero, is injured at the moment. But it then says to me, and I don't know if about the Japanese psyche or their culture, whatever it is that actually, probably all the while that he's here, they're not just necessarily Matoma fans, they're Brighton fans. I mean, AD, have you sort of ever thought about sort of what the culture might be, what their considerations might be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, basically, it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Like, do you remember those guys we were talking to? Actually, like
Oh, like Palace.
a couple of years ago, and it was just so wonderful because there was like all these Japanese guys all waiting for Matoma, and there's all these Ecuadorians all waiting for. I think when
Yeah.
Moises was there and Purvis was still there at the time, and it was you just see all these. Like people who are there essentially to watch Brighton, but also to see and meet their heroes. I just absolutely
Yeah.
adore it.
Yeah.
Absolutely adore it.
Absolutely. Although we did try and interview some of them, and we said, "Do you speak English?" And they said,
No,
"Yes."
then most of them
No,
said no.
their entire, I think their entire understanding of English was understanding, "Do you understand English?" And the response of yes.
But I mean, if you look back to 97, and like, and the thought of this, if this was happening now, unfortunately for us, hopefully it will never ever happen for us ever again. But if you go back to Fans United, and when we had like fans from all over the country and all over Europe coming to
Yeah.
help us in our hour of need, that would be fun for you, wouldn't it, Jenny?
An interesting idea.
Yeah. Yeah, a fans united at the Amex. Should the concept, like you say, let's hope it never
Yeah.
happens. But should that concept,
Okay.
I'd be amazed if
But
it could actually, Jenny. Could it?
I don't know. You guys are probably better placed than me.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
okay. Well, let's move it on because I mean, one thing that we didn't have back in those days was as much fan engagement and or a fans advisory board. Now you're very much involved with that. Obviously, there was the report that came out last year. How's that progressing? And what ideas are coming to the table now? And how can we move those forward?
Yeah, we've got lots of new ideas for the new season. So the fan advisory board have been in operation. This is the third year now. So we refresh that group every year. There's about four people join and four people leave each year to try and keep some continuum. We're very fortunate to have the chair as Joe Davis and the deputy chair as Jonathan Paul, both huge Brighton enthusiasts. Joe being particularly passionate actually about the women's game as well, and having been an ex-player herself. But there's lots of work that's come from that. The coaches that you're seeing that are going to every women's away game, that's been very much the fan advisory board that have led on that, and then brilliantly supported by Visit Kissimmee this year. This year we're also looking at some new initiatives. I think some of the work we're doing in the South Stand, where we want to obviously turn that into a bit more Albion stronghold support over there, and when we move the away fans, that's something that we want to use the fan advisory board to help us with that, and probably create a wider atmosphere group. And then there's work that we've started this year about trying to engage more with families, listen more to the family voice, and that's something that's being led by our marketing team alongside some different reps from the fan advisory board. So excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. But and another thing that probably within your remit, Jenny, is and it's something that we saw on Saturday was that wonderful poppy display in the East Stand.
I can't take any credit for that. That is our marketing team who did a fantastic job this year. They did. Anna, who is our head of marketing, said she'd gone a bit wild this year. And I thought it really did look fantastic, didn't it? And I think all the poppies on the lamppost around the ground, I think they themed that really, really brilliantly this year.
Absolutely, perfectly done. Absolutely. Now, I've got another sort of, I suppose, fairly specific technical question here. And as I was saying that, I was kind of slightly out of the picture during the early part of the season here. But and the thing that I had an issue with, I don't mind telling people my medical issue here is I had a leg infection, which means I'm okay now, but it meant that I had a severe restriction of movement. Now I have a season ticket in the West Upper, which would have meant that getting up those 120 odd steps would have been nigh on impossible. Is there a way for me as a regular season ticket holder to have been able to have got access to one of the disabled seats, as a I suppose as an exchange swap or something like that? If something like that happens, i.e. someone has got a temporary disability, when they the and getting to their seat is actually going to be a problem. Is there a procedure in place for that to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. We, unfortunately, during the course of the season, we see our fair share of broken legs and various other things. And we always do everything we can to try and help people. Where it gets a bit more difficult is if you break your leg 12 hours before kickoff. We're probably a little bit more a bit more stuck sometimes with those ones. But give us a bit of notice. We will always try to find a seat. We're fortunate enough to have a really great allocation of disabled bays within the stadium. They're not all taken seasonally, so we often have some accessible seats available, which we'll move people to. The support services team, my support services team are brilliant, and we'll always help fans with that.
Okay, you heard it first from Jenny Gower. Don't break your leg 12 hours before kickoff.
Just don't break your leg.
Well,
Just
there is
don't break
this.
your leg.
Well, this is it. I mean, in my case, I was stuck in hospital, so I couldn't. Let's put it this way: I wasn't chucked out until such time as I became mobile. So, in that sense, it was an issue, but I was kind of still recovering. But it just occurred to me that, you know, this is well, it's not just for me, obviously. Of course, it's not. But like you say, if there is that issue that Jenny's talking about, where people do injure themselves, you know, there is actually a procedure in place, which is brilliant.
So, Jenny, you've been at the club a while now, and how much of the action on the pitch do you actually get to see?
Well, it's pretty minimal, if I'm honest. I tend to be sort of in and around the ticket office up until about half time. I'll probably then go up to the office and be there until around, well, probably just after half time. What I see tends to be, I'm afraid, on a screen
Yeah.
in the ticket office, and that's the case for a lot of my colleagues.
So a day in the life for you at this on a match day. What time do you get to the stadium?
Yeah, it varies. A lot my team will be in, depending on the kickoff time. We tend to, if it's a 3 o'clock kickoff time, my team will be in from about 9. And yeah, phones go on, and we're pretty busy first thing. Everyone sort of does the rush first thing on match day, and then we drop down to the ticket office to start dealing with people in person, and that normally happens sort of more like 2 to 3 hours before kickoff. We're all down there, but really our crunch point comes, yeah, about an hour to an hour and a half before kickoff, all the way up until half time. That's when we tend to get to the big descent of crowds, and the more we're doing, obviously, the touting work, the more people we are now seeing on match day.
Half season tickets are being advertised now. Is that literally just a case of, actually, I'm just thinking it's 19 home games. Does that mean you're offering 10 or 9?
Yeah, we've got 10 home games this year. So yeah, a few more matches after Christmas. And there's really some strong teams in the second half. I guess it's a good quality half season ticket in terms of seeing your Liverpools, your Man Uniteds, your Chelseas, that kind of thing. So, yeah, they've been popular. We are selling. We'll only be selling for a fairly short time. But yeah, they've been popular, and it's a good way to make sure you secure your seat and you're in for a renewal for a full season ticket for next year.
And I was about to say, is it the case that you, is it first come, first served, or do you actually just offer it to the people who are the front of the queue?
Yeah, it's first come first. So we went out to our MyAlbion Plus members first, as we kind of always commit to do. But after that, we're now on general sale. So anyone
Yeah.
who wants a half season ticket, there are some available.
Because I thought there was a massive waiting list. What is that just gone now?
We always go on sale to members first. There's a big group of members who do pay for that privilege to be in the first dibs. But there's quite a few of them who don't necessarily want to take. They'll take out a membership on the basis they might want to become a season ticket holder in 3 or 4 years when their son or their daughter is old enough to come and enjoy it. So we don't tend to see that everybody who is on the waiting list wants to buy. And for the past couple of seasons, we have actually gone on general sale.
Yeah,
Sure.
because I mean, if you were working at Liverpool, I think you'd have to be dealing with like season ticket holders who were born in 1832, I believe. But it's like,
So Jenny, obviously, as
back
Adi points
in
out, you've been j doing this job for obviously a fair few years,
the
and I'm just wondering. Obviously, I'd imagine that certainly since you joined, the capacity has increased, and therefore your workload has increased. And obviously, with this new procedure that you've got about actually trying to track down or identify international ticket touts, so your job has probably grown in stature and probably grown in droves. So how do you actually cope with 31,000 or 23,000 season ticket short order season ticket holders who want their orders fulfilled? I mean, is there ever an issue where you come back and you say, "Sod this"?
Absolutely not. No, we look. We I'm incredibly fortunate that I have a brilliant team underneath me. So all of the guys who pick up the phones, answer the emails, answer the web chats, they're great, and they are but a lot of them are Albion fans themselves. And I think we have real experience within the team who look after fans and make sure. That they get what they need. So we try to be really clear with our communications. I think that's absolutely the key. When we rolled out digital ticketing, which was a huge piece of work done by the ticketing team, there was a lot of communication, and we do, I know we send a lot of communication, but we try to do that to make sure that everything is really smooth on match day. And that's always our aim. So we try to make things as easy and as simple for fans as possible so that they can self-serve, and it should be a worst case scenario. They have to contact us.
I'm loving the entry iPad entry things actually. I mean they're so much easier to use than the things that the kind of the Oyster things. I mean, it's just a case of turn your phone around this way, put it up there. It's the idiot proof version. Because the number of people I remember say, turn your phone up that way. Okay, no, make sure the app's open.
I
Okay,
could
no, it's
not
your. F
possibly. I could not possibly comment now.
No. It's you and technology go together like peaches and creosote, don't
Sometimes
they?
I'm really good at that. Okay, well, I mean, I'll tell you what else happened on Saturday.
Tell me.
There was a game of football at the Amex
I thought you were going to mention Marmite again.
Well, no, not at this time. Not this
No.
time. But there was a game of football at the Amex, and Leeds United were our visitors. I mentioned that Poppy display there, Al, but it was poignant, wasn't it? It was very good.
Oh, superb, superb. And the last post was actually played with actually a kind of intensity that I suppose I'm probably just sort of misremembering as to previous years, but that was absolutely perfect. I mean, for the most part, you had some Leeds fans coming in. I'm not going to blame them because they don't necessarily realise that there is a minute's silence. But, you know, for the most part, absolutely
No, it was
wonderfully observed
beautifully observed.
and beautifully observed. And that display was just absolutely super. I mean, it helps actually that you've got an East Stand that looks like that. You can do something like that. I always think back to the Together thing from what, 10 years ago now. That sort of still sticks in my sort of, you know, it leaves a lump in my throat. That was just
Look,
amazing. It's like you've got.
there's been some really good displays in that East End, actually. I've got to say,
Absolutely. I'm waiting for
it's
them to.
been.
I'm waiting for the club to do a visage of your face just to see how it'll come out.
Yeah,
At least they wouldn't have to worry
it'd need
about
to be
any.
shiny.
It
It
would
would
be
need to be
very
shiny.
shiny, and they wouldn't have to worry about any hair.
But I mean, we were talking after the game on Saturday, and this was, I mean, it was a regulation win. I mean, we haven't had those for a while, have we?
You say it was regulation. When it came to our last season in the championship, there were a lot of what I felt were regulations and wins. We were clearly, even though we didn't prove it, we were clearly the best side in that in the championship that season. I mean, Newcastle were just losing to people they frankly shouldn't have been. So yeah, we turn up and we beat this side and we beat that side, sometimes without even getting out of second gear. I know what you mean because poor sides are there to be put away, and I didn't think much of Leeds United. They had a lot of the ball, they didn't do anything with it. So 3-0 looks comfortable. But actually, I thought the first half was a wee bit of a dirge. And probably neither side. All right, we scored the goal. And it was actually Minte's wonderful bit of magic, I suppose,
Well,
in
you see
that little dink,
that.
hang on, that little dink pass to Weaver was the one pass that probably opened up the Leeds defence, the only one that opened up the Leeds defence that entire half. And it was probably a pass that just really didn't reflect the rest of
Yeah.
that half.
I mean.
But yes, poor, like I say, poor sides are there to be tucked away, and 3-0 looked good, and I can't say we didn't deserve it.
Yeah. I mean, that dink pass was just absolutely beautiful. I did actually see someone else post this on social media, actually, but it was almost identical to Simon Adingra's dink pass to Ansu Fati for his goal against Ajax, and it was just, oh,
Absolutely. No, I've
sumptuous.
noticed that obviously it's something they work on in training because I've noticed they've done a few of those kind of little 10-yard passes that you can see that a floor pass would be intercepted, but when it's at knee height or at hip height, it's very difficult to defend against. You've got almost I've got a like you've got a hula hoop around your waist. You've got to throw your hip out in trying to defend it, and you can't do it. You know, your foot can't get up in time. As a little pass, provided it can go well. And Weaver was on it like a flash. And Danny Welbeck, who, let's face it, is now, to be fair, you called it when he arrived, was always going to be or to achieve legendary status.
I think so. Absolutely. Jenny, Danny Welbeck, is he a legend?
Believable, wasn't he? At the well, we won't say that he's an older statesman, but yeah, what fantastic impact he's had on us, well, for the last couple of seasons.
Is he the same character that we see on the telly? Because again, I like to watch. Well, my wife likes to watch Graham Norton, and she sees these actors that she likes, and when they're on his show, they come across and they show themselves. So the person we see on telly, is he like that in real life?
Definitely not the right person to ask you for to answer this. I think Paul Cameron is probably more your man for this.
Yeah.
But as far as I can understand, I think he seems to come across as being one of the nicest, most genuine people that yeah you could hope to meet.
And given that we also have a couple of gigglers in Belieber and Ruta, they seem like a happy camp. I suppose that, you know, we know this, AD, that when we I, let's put it this way, I know that I'm not going to tell you the listening figures, but I know how the listening figures are so wildly affected depending on whether we've won or lost. And it's not even whether we've won or lost sometimes, it's how we've lost. You know, sometimes we've had a really, really good game and, quote, we're unlucky to lose, but, you know, it was a good game of football. That isn't affected it. It's that kind of thing that, you know, can the Albion players, by being gigglers, you know, turn us into a bunch of
Well, you
happy
know,
campers as well?
I mean, the club does like they love to put out
Oh,
that tunnel.
The Unlocked
with
series is
tunnel,
brilliant.
we call it tunnel vision for want of a better phrase. And you know, and after a win and like watching the players come through that, it is fun to watch. But yeah, now going back to what you were saying about Danny. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about him this week. Tommy Tickle is not like announcing his latest England squads at the end of it on Friday. It looks quite likely that Danny's going to get back into the mix.
Why do you say quite likely?
Well, we're in a World Cup year out, right?
Yep, no, I'll
Okay,
get that.
and it's there. Danny is currently the leading English striker in the Premier League.
Yep.
He's not going to start games for England, but if something happens to Harry Kane, who's going to back him up?
No,
And
I get that totally.
his goal scoring record for England has been better than anything he's ever had in his club career, apart from maybe at the Albion, bizarrely. But you know, 16 goals and 42 appearances for England
Very, very
is
good,
the
isn't
best
it? I
ratio of his career. So,
think the thing that helps Danny Welbeck most of all,
yeah.
if this was going to be the case, is that Thomas Tuchel is not here for the long run. He is here to try and win England the World Cup. So he's not there to develop a legacy in the way that Gareth Southgate was. He's not there to sort of, he's not going to be here at, you know, the end of the decade in that particular role. I can't imagine that he will be. He's been brought in to try and get England the World Cup next summer. So he is just going to ram in whoever is in form at that particular time rather than worrying about getting in the latest 19-year-old starlet. In that sense, if Welbeck is on form and he's in not injured and he's and his head's well, when I say his head's in the right place, he's the consummate professional. In that sense, that is his main advantage.
I mean that is the caveat though, isn't it? Because I mean obviously, we'd be delighted for him to get back into that setup, and he is certainly deserving of it. And hearing loads of other people talking, people that have played with him or know him, say what a delightful person he is to have around the place. It would be absolutely wonderful. But on the reverse flip side of the coin, I don't really want him to go away with England.
Yeah,
I want
because
him to rest up during international break so he doesn't get broken again.
well, I know the national sides do have a bit of a habit of sending back our players, sort of, you know, in need of mending. It's not particularly clever. Listen, we'll see. I mean, I'm sure we can discuss it, you know, in next week's show. But we must close up. So I'm just gonna leave you with ask you one last question, Jenny, and then you can relax and you know, go and have a nice glass of wine away from us. Now, like I say, as I've said before, you've done this gig for quite a while. Do you still come into work? And I know you what you're going to say here, because you know that people from the club are going to be listening to this. But do you still come in with a smile on your face, you know, looking forward to every day in your job?
No, I genuinely love what I do. As we say, I have done it for a while now. But I don't think seasons are the same. They never are the same. I think that's one of the reasons that we all love working in football. You know, I think we're on a particularly, you know, you look at the last 5 or 6 years, and we're really on a journey, I think, at the Albion as well. And it's been an absolute pleasure to be part of. So I think, you know, from promotion through to Europe, you know, from kind of just battling to stay in the Premier League to being, you know, really one of the strongholds for the top 10, and then punching for Europe every season. That's what keeps you interested, you know, and that's what keeps you loving it, is the fact that the challenges change, but you love what you do. And I say, ultimately, I have a brilliant team. No season, no day to day is the same, and that's what's so great about it.
That is all we have time for this week. So thank you so much to Jenny Gower for joining us. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. We see you then. Thanks for listening. Bye.